Hello out there, Foxes fans, and welcome back to yet another edition of the U.S. Foxes podcast. Coming to you live, as always, from various time zones around the United States. Tonight, actually only two time zones, because I am joined this evening by just my co-host, also here in California, Mr. Chris Warner, up in Del Mar. What's up, man? How are you?
How you doing, buddy? It feels like a long, long time since we've done this.
I know.
And of course, nothing's happened in the world of Leicester City since the last time we recorded, eh, Matt? Just an easy kind of few weeks.
Yep, that's exactly right. Thank God that, you know, nothing major big or any, you know, big news has dropped or anything's happened. That's, of course, we're being facetious, guys. We do appreciate you being patient with the lack of pods. For those of you that didn't read the message we put out on Twitter, I have unfortunately lost my grandma last week, so I had to travel across the country back to Ohio, to the eastern part of Ohio, Appalachia land, to put her to rest. So I do appreciate you guys, all the those of you that did know, your kind messages and notes that you sent, you know, when she was 96, so she had an amazing life. Glad to be back in California, though, and yeah, glad to be back with you, Chris, and to get caught up on everything that's happened in our world.
Yeah, firstly, just want to pass on my condolences, Matt. Love you, buddy. I know it's been super tough, so really also appreciate the people that have reached out on the podcast. And I mean, in terms of kind of when you came back, I mean, the club, wow. I mean, what a roller coaster of a 14 days that we've had since probably what the last time we recorded. I mean, yeah. Look, Matt, I don't know about you, mate, but I'll just kind of summarize it on my end. Like, I've gone from hating everything about Leicester City and being so close to just thinking, you know what, I'm completely done with this club, to now the complete opposite. And now I'm like, oh my God, like, you've got me. It's the most toxic relationship you could ever have. And yep, this club, every time you think, you know what, I've had enough, it just lures you back in. And the lure this time was what, back-to-back amazing performances. Like, it's been such an emotional roller coaster these past 14 days. I mean, on the field, right, off the field, nothing's ever normal with this football club. And God, mate, yeah, it's just exhausting even talking about it right now.
I know. I tell people all the time, like, some of the newer American fans that are like gotten to experience what we, you know, now refer to as the glory years, I guess, you know, our almost 10-year run in up in the Prem, and now to be back in the championship and having a year where at points it was HMS Piss the League and at other points it was, holy fuck, this is the most dysfunctional shit ever. It just feels like we're back to a sense of normalcy in a way, Chris.
I love the idea that basically normal for us as a fan base is the pirate ship's just rocking and it's like, hold on tight, and this is just like, yeah, a normal day. I know other fan bases will kind of say that they've had a crazy 20 years, but you start back from 02 with administration and pissing off 95% of football clubs to then, as you say, getting relegated to League One, getting promoted, the great escape, winning it all, quarterfinals of the Champions League, FA Cup, then to get relegated again and then go through this season. Like, that in that 20-year period feels like an entire lifetime for probably a lot of fan bases that are like a lot of fan bases. And it's like, that's just a snippet. And like, I just think back to what Ollie was talking about when we did that great interview with him on the podcast. Go listen, by the way. I still think I've listened about five times. Absolutely brilliant. That kid is awesome. You talk about what he's had in his entire life. Yeah. it's wild, absolutely wild, yeah, mate. And yeah, I mean, you're right. It doesn't feel, it only feels normal when this is happening to the club and it's all hands on deck and you just kind of have got used to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you talk about the doldrums. I mean, after the win at Birmingham, obviously, it was like, here we go. We've got a nice little run in here with Millwall and Plymouth, and let's get these points, seal this thing up and be done early. And absolutely not. That's just not what we do. Just two fucking horrible 1-0 losses that just made it seem like the world was ending. And frankly, yeah, I mean, I'm with you, but I was just like, this is just so typical. We're going to end up in the playoffs against Cove. I could see the writing on the wall. And then fast forward to the West Brom match, just an incredible performance put in there, a win. And then coming into Southampton, I don't think any person on earth, if had you asked them, you think Leicester's going to hang five on a team that's, you know, let's be real, we're also very much in the mix for autos at that point, had things gone the right way. And to put on that performance at home, a rocking fucking KP, like this, it's the momentum is back with us. It has swung back. And now with, you know, Preston and Blackburn in the season, I just feel so fucking good and hype now.
Mate, you think about, like, if you ask any other fan base, okay, you've got two games. Would you rather have 16th and 20th in the league away, or would you rather play 4th and 5th at home? And where you're going to get the 6 points, if you were going to get 6 points out of those two choices, where would it come? And I think, again, right, Leicester's really the only team where you're going to get 6 points from 4th versus 5th. And 16th and 20th, we're going to lose both games. I mean, yeah, the absolute craziness. Yeah, the past two games, though, have been, I mean, the Saturday against West Brom, you felt at the end of the game, there was just such a relief around that stadium. And I mean, let's be honest, West Brom really pushed us. And if it wasn't for the heroics of Hamza, I'm not quite sure we come out of that game with 3 points. But yeah, the past two games, the KP has been electric. I think Monday night was just incredible. I think one thing we may need to kind of readjust ourselves on is the idea that maybe Southampton was the team we needed. I mean, we have a hell of a record against these guys now in recent years. Vardy's got a hell of a record. I mean, it's kind of wild when you think about the performances. And I mean, this season alone, That game at St. Mary's was probably one of our top five performances of the season. And then on Monday, it was the same. It was such a killer performance killer performance by the side there. So, yeah, thank you, Southampton. I mean, maybe we can rely on you in these situations to turn everything around.
Yeah, and, you know, we talk about how I've said, I think a couple pods ago, I was talking about how the bad news was we're in the championship, right? And anything can happen at any time. But the good news was the teams around us are also playing in the championship and anything can happen at any fucking time. And good God, have we seen that on display? And really, it's just a perfect example of how this is the best league. I mean, say what you will, but this league, as far as entertaining football, unpredictability, I think it is just as good as it gets, and I really love it down here. That being said, I'm thrilled to get back up and get that Premier League money in the coffers, but can't say that we haven't enjoyed our time down here, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's been fun. Well, we're speaking like we're there.
Yes, I know. You're right.
We got two games. We need 3 points. But you're right. I think looking back on the season, like if we did a retrospective in a couple of years time about this season, I think we'll find it very exciting, to your point. I think it'll be a really fun kind of nostalgic overview of it. In the moment, it's like, get me out of here as fast as I can. I mean, to your point, like Leeds, Ipswich, some of the games where they've dropped points recently have been kind of those to your point, the craziness of the league, and games where I thought, for example, Leeds on Monday, I thought at Middlesbrough, I thought that was going to be a super tough game for them. And yeah, it was for maybe 20 minutes, but then all of a sudden they absolutely spank them in the second half. And you're like, oh, okay, well, here we go again. And it's so, yeah, I mean, it's a helter-skelter of a league. I mean, you just look at the it's always kind of, you've got four teams that are going to be pushing 90 points, which is absolutely insane. Wild, insane for a league. And so Yes, I mean, I was listening to the podcast, the Second Tier, this week, and they did mention on that like maybe for them as neutrals looking at the season, it's kind of a bit lackluster in the sense that Leicester on paper had the best squad and they were doing what they expected to do at the midway point of the season, which was dominate the league, think about setting records and all that. And then in the end, we've kind of stumbled into this position of hopefully getting those last 3 points and to get promoted. And I think they're kind of right. It does feel a bit like we've stumbled to the finish line. But hopefully this has served us as a club in a way where we can build from this, because I think we'll be ignorant to kind of try and brush under the rug what happened since January and why did it all go wrong, because we've done that before with Brendan and we've done that before in other seasons and it's had real big consequences going into the next season. So I hope we do, touch wood, get those 3 points against Preston on Monday night, get over the line and then kind of evaluate, okay, what did we learn and how can that set us up next year? Because it's going to be a hell of a task given what we expect to be happening come the beginning of next season on negative points just to even stay in the league.
Let me ask you this, Chris. Like, in your opinion, the struggles, the ones that had us all, you know, chewing on our fingernails, was there a thing that glared to you that this is the reason why? Is it a style issue? Is it a player issue? What was, in your opinion, the biggest factor? Because if you look on the internet, you read Fox's talk, you read Reddit. I mean, it is just, everybody's got a different opinion. But I guess what, in your opinion, why was this such a struggle this year versus being the cakewalk that we had all hoped and everyone predicted it was going to be for us as, you know, the team with the wage bill compared to everyone else's that we had?
So I think there were a number of reasons. I think as an overarching theme, I think probably the lack of experience of Enzo in this league, or as a manager, in fact, probably was one of the major contributors. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but one of the things that's frustrated me the most has been the way that he squeezed his rotation of the squad. It feels like we've gone into like the NBA playoffs and where you've kind of shortened the bench to what, seven, you're five on the court and two. And that's what it felt like Enzo has done since January. And what I don't understand is you look at like the Bournemouth performance in the FA Cup when we absolutely rotated and put out a hell of a performance out there. You think about what we did through August to December, where every week we were playing different players. We were rotating the squad really effectively and getting those results. And I think that's been one of the frustrations, has been him narrowing who he wants in the side. And it's ironic because you think about the difference between the West Brom game and the Southampton game, where Cody was absolutely fantastic against West Brom. I thought he was solid. He had every right to stay in the team against Southampton. And then you looked at the lineup and Enzo didn't have him in the team. And you were like, it's a massive gamble. And it paid off. Don't get me wrong. It paid off. And you can't say anything bad about that decision. But it's, again, it's that he only rotated when it was necessary and at the last resort, it felt, towards the end of the season. I think if Jim was here as well, the other thing we'd have to say is his inability to make a sub. It was so, I think that's the other thing that's been very frustrating, is like this idea of like for like. Like, okay, this player isn't doing it, let's just put on another player in the same position to try and do the same thing, when maybe what was required was a rethink tactically of the situation and how maybe we need to change it. So I think those two things probably kind of go into just the naivete maybe of Enzo as a manager, and something maybe hopefully he learns from and builds on. I mean, I think one thing we've known about this year is like, he's a stubborn bugger. Like, you're not going to get him. I mean, change for him is what? Telling Ricardo not to play as an inverted fullback for the first half on Tuesday night. Like, that's considered a massive change for Enzo. And so we shouldn't expect much more than that. But hey, maybe those are the little steps that he's taking. So let me flip it, Matt. What about you? What do you think that difference has been?
I think, well, speaking of Cody, I mean, I don't think we should be surprised at that. I mean, all you got to do is look at Wanya Marsal early in the year, jump in the Wayback Machine and the game that he had, and then remember the very next, we didn't see him for like 5 weeks. So we know that that is something that Enzo will do. I don't think those are the same circumstances. I mean, Connor's age is probably what I think, because he looked fucking dead at the end of that match. So I think that was probably more of it than whatever happened with Wanya. But I will say that when it was at its darkest, you know, after Plymouth, I think maybe it was some sort of wake up call or something as far as the style goes, because we have seen more long kicks from Mads in the last two matches than we saw all year long. And I mean, if you just go three or four matches before that, when he talked about, you know, threatening to, if Mads kicks it long, I'm going to bring in Stolarczyk. Remember that quote. And now the last two games, we've seen Mads kick it long at least four or five times. So I think that maybe, to your point, I think that we are seeing an evolution of Enzo where he is at least changing a few things as far as the way and style that he'll play in certain situations. So that's very good for me to see. And for me, I think it is just, I'll go with you. Like, I think his inability to make subs when everyone in the stadium is crying out for it, and everyone on TV is crying out for it, and his reluctance or stubbornness, whatever the hell you want to call it, has been just dreadful this year at times, and has cost us points straight up. I mean, you look at the way that he was outcoached by multiple managers this year, just shows his naivete in the league and just lack of experience, I think. So I'm with you. I think that that's there. I also think that there was maybe a bit of an attitude around the squad as far as when we played some of these smaller teams that there's no chance, you know, we are Leicester City. Only thing that was missing is as far as some of the attitudes this year, I thought, was a clear backpack. a la James Madison. But I think that that crept in a little bit. So to see the humility of the side and coming in and putting in the work and grinding out some of these big wins, I think it's been everything. I'm glad that we got hot when we did.
Yeah, I think you're bang on with bringing up the way that we distribute the ball from the back is another great example, I think, to kind of talk about the subtle changes to maybe what we've seen as a team, which I think, yeah, maybe does highlight that someone's been in Enzo's ear and somebody has said to him, hey, like, and I think ultimately that's probably a combination. I mean, to your point, at our darkest moment in the past 2 weeks, like, it's been a long time since the fan base has felt that toxic. You think after Plymouth away, especially, I think you had that. And then that was coupled then on the Monday with the financial news. And it was you could see, I think, from the way that, like, well, just as communicating as a US fan base about the club, but on Fox's Talk and other social media platforms, like, there was just this darkness that had come over the club. And I think I'm sure Enzo was not naive enough to not notice that. And I mean, yeah, I think on Tuesday, tactically, first off, especially, I thought he was bang on with the way that we approached Southampton, because they were a dangerous side. And I think we did the right things to try and neutralize them. And I mean, you look back on a season where that's been epitomized on high possession, high passing football, and we go and win a game 5-0. With less than 40% possession. I mean, that is
the exact opposite,
ironic thing about this season. But one of our biggest, the game where we've always said all season, we're going to smash someone, we end up doing it and we end up with less than 40% of the football. I mean, crazy, absolutely crazy, and absolutely Leicester City.
Yeah, and you could see they kept, you know, I almost felt bad for Russell Martin. They kept just showing him over and over on the sides, and he was just looking more and more down. It was just the second saddest Southampton manager I think we've ever seen. I think this is a good point, too, just to show, you know, we're talking about the dark cloud, and, you know, we get that huge win against West Brom. And momentum is at its absolute highest, and we are rocking, and everybody's feeling so good. And then the club goes and just fucks himself again with an announcement about the tickets and $25 for a physical, or £25 for a physical ticket this year. And they drop the news at like 9 p.m., you know, on the weekend, and it's like trying to hide it. They just can't stay out of their own way, Chris.
No, but and you know it's deliberate, because one of the interesting things that I think Union FS pointed out was that a lot of the fan base still utilize the card as their means of getting into the stadium. Because I don't know how when you went this year, Matt, to get into the game, like how you did it. But last time I went, we did use the ticket on your phone, and it was absolutely crap. It took us about five times to try and get it in. And so you can understand as a fan base why they don't want to. I mean, how long it would take to get into the ground if everybody did this. But you're right. I mean, it feels like it just feels, I think, given the news about our inability to manage our finances effectively, it feels like it's got where we're scraping the barrel and trying to find every penny that we can. And the easiest way the club feels like they can do that is by robbing the fans and generating another £1 million by saying, hey, you know what? 25 quid to have a new card. I mean, I don't know where they're making these cards. They better be making them by hand somewhere at Harrods, because it's absolutely extortionate. And you know what's going to happen, though, is that £25, the fan base is going to kick off. They're going to say, okay, based on fan feedback, we're going to reduce it to 15 quid or whatever it is. The fans are still going to be out of pocket, and the club's made 500,000 by basically just saying, you know what, we'll just throw a number out there and we'll get some feedback and make the true number. And that's not what you want. I think the level of trust in the business side of the club is its lowest in a long, long time at this moment in time. And again, you're right, mate. It's just the messaging. It's just Enzo's in press conferences talking about how much he needs the fans on his side, how much the players need the fans to be loud, to be cheering. And then at the same time, you're like, well, at the same time, we're just going to rob you of another 25 quid. And it's like, what are we doing? Crazy. Absolutely crazy, mate.
It's pretty tone deaf. And I think, you know, I get what they're trying to do. We've seen it in America, here in San Diego, with the Padres, for example. They were physical tickets forever, and then they switched to the digital. And I can tell you that first year, the digital tickets was a fucking disaster. Probably what people have seen at the KP, you know, reading the stories on Fox's talk about, you know, stuff not being scanned right and having to scan it 5 or 10 times. That being said, 2 years now later, it is so much faster. It is faster than it ever was with physical tickets going into a Padres game now. They barely even, like, the software, hardware, whatever, it doesn't even need to really be, they can almost scan your ticket just by being near it, if that makes sense. Like, it goes so fast, and the lines have been cut in half because of it. So I get where a lot of the, you know, fan base is upset about the physical ticket and stuff, but I also, at the same time, I've got to say, I have seen it work, and now seeing it work in person. I mean, we're headed to a Padres game tomorrow night, for example. This will be our fourth one of the year, and the ease of which just sliding in with your ticket now digitally it's undeniable. But that being said, there's definitely going to be some growing pains, and the fact that you're just going to try and change it all at once. And by the way, it's going to be $25 if you're not down and don't trust us that it's going to work next year is a lot to ask from fans.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? It's like they're trying to force you down a route by just overcharging for the current mechanisms and not really explaining the benefits as to why, to your point, it is more effective. And I think, again, it just this lack of transparency from the club and just miscommunication and just the inability to be effective just drives the fan base up the wall. And I think, I understand as well, talking about the cost of the season ticket rise. And they spoke about this is what the first rise in 5% rise in 6 years, apparently. But there was a few guys that have been on a few different podcasts explaining, well, that really isn't the truth, because if you look at it over a 10-year period, it is a lot more than that. And I mean, we're not raising the prices like they are doing on the other side of the trend, which is kind of wild. But I'll give the Forest business a little bit more credit. They came out and said the reason they're doing it is because they need to make more money to support their FFP. And it's like, well, maybe we as a club, we're probably doing the same thing. But again, it's that lack of transparency on our side. It's like, you know what? We'll just try and just say it's a 5% rise and et cetera, et cetera. And that's really difficult for, I mean, it's still super expensive to go to the football in England. It is pricing out teams. And you look on the club's website and they're consistently, all they're promoting is the hospitality packages, this new Premier Club that's just been done this year by the, like, these are big tickets. And you feel like we're just going down this route where it's like, we're just going to keep raising. And unfortunately, a lot of the fans that have been there through the darkest of times are eventually going to get priced out, which absolutely sucks. And to your point, Matt, as we talked about right at the beginning of this discussion, the fact that it was released on a Sunday evening at 9 o'clock at night, again, just like, when are you ever releasing good news on a Sunday at 9 o'clock at night? Like, never. I mean, I think that in itself tells you how the club knew this messaging was going to happen. And yeah, just frustrating, Matt. I think it's just a frustrating kind of.
Yeah, point. It really is. But let's get out of that negativity, guys, and let's talk about something. Get back into the good vibes here, and let's just talk about the man, JV9, the ageless one, our goat, the king. The performances when we need him the most. Any of you that talk shit this year and said he was past it, I just want you to suck on an egg now and realize that he is the greatest of all time, and he's putting us over the edge with these performances. Obviously, we got Fatawu doing his thing. Many other people on the team that are obviously putting in incredible shifts, but let's just talk about our number nine for a minute, Chris, and what he is doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, you think about beginning of the season when we talked about Vardy, we knew he was coming up to the age of 37 at that point. And it's like, what did we realistically expect from him? And you think about what he's done this year, 16 goals in 33 games, averaging a goal every 1.6 games. You can't expect anything more. And most importantly, it's about those timings in those. He's scored key goals in key moments. And I think the past two games have kind of epitomized that. The header, both of his goals have been just those. I think the goal against Southampton was really the moment where the Saints' heads just completely dropped. And they were like, there was no way for them to get back in the game. And then ultimately the goal against West Brom was the decisive goal that kind of sealed the win. And I mean, the Ndidi goal obviously wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the Vardy header that the keeper kind of parried to Ndidi's feet. And so, yeah, absolutely monumental performance. I think the fact of the matter is, obviously, he's one of the players we've had to kind of be cognizant of his usage just because of his age. And Enzo's asked him from Saturday to Tuesday, can you do it? And you know, Vardy's always going to give you 90% to 120%, I should say. And he did. And you're right, Matt. I think we'll look back on this season as another reason why Jamie Vardy is on the Mount Rushmore of Leicester City, and another reason why we should build the statue this summer for this lad, because it's performances, it's just the passion, the love for the club, his dedication, the work rate, everything you could ever wish for is just Jamie Vardy.
I'll throw in resiliency, because that's a side of him that we've really seen this year that we hadn't in the past. You know, when he misses that penalty, it's just like, oh my God. And that penalty, by the way, when did Jamie get away from just kicking the fuck out of the ball? Like, those are Jamie Vardy penalties. I don't want to see him place it. I want to see it, like, if it hits the keeper, it's going to knock his teeth out. That's what I saw. But the fact that he misses that instead of, you know, putting his head down and being like, I'm past it, whatever the fuck it is, it motivates him more, and he just turns on that performance, and I'm just like blown away, and I pinch myself every time we get to see him put in another performance. And especially, you know, reading now, Tanner's saying that they're looking at signing him to an extension. I mean, it's just everything.
Yeah, it's interesting. It kind of came out after the game. Then Tanner on The Athletic said, that he's one of they're thinking of extending the contract. I mean, why not? Like, there are going to be a few players that come out of this year with kind of gold stars. And when we do our end of season review, he's going to be one of them. And so why wouldn't you, as long as financially it makes sense, although what that means to the club, I have no idea. But I think why not give him, why not let him have his own terms? I think fundamentally what he's done for this football club, I think he deserves to have his own, whatever pathway he wants to have toward his retirement, we let him as a football club. Because without this guy, we haven't gone to the top of the mountain. We would not have experienced what we did experience as fans. And so he has every right to forge whatever he wants to do between, whether it's end of this season, end of next season, or whether it's in three seasons, that guy has every right to do whatever he wants to do.
Including player manager. I will say, let's move on to talk about our young stud who had been struggling, and we were all like, man, when are these shots going to start dropping for Fatawu? And my God, did they ever against Southampton.
Yeah, heck of a performance, wasn't it? I mean, all three goals, I really enjoyed all three goals because they were all slightly different, weren't they? I mean, the first one, we'll maybe get into it. Like, did you think it was a foul? Like for the first goal, like Faust absolutely clattered him, and albeit the ref was standing no farther than like 3 foot away, but it looked a foul on
TV. It was right in front of him. So who am I to second guess a championship referee, Chris?
I mean, it summed up his season, didn't it? That he just like no nonsense got so excited like a little puppy and just went straight through him. But great pass from KDH, great composure with the finish as well. Like, he sees the keeper rushing out, puts it underneath him. The second goal is, I mean, just quality, isn't it? Like, you cut inside.
That's what we've seen. Yep.
Yeah. It is bloody brilliant to see our wingers wanting to cut inside and look at trying to curl the ball into that far corner. I mean, that's what we've been screaming out for the past four
seasons. 5 years.
5 years, exactly. Yeah. Now both sides of the pitch, we've got people that can actually do that. And heck of a finish. I was listening to the radio when he scored, and Pipes, it felt like Pipes knew it was in from like the moment it hit his foot, because Pipes was like, goal. And then there was like this 3 second delay, and then everybody cheered. And it was like, it must have been incredible to see it from his angle as it kind of went straight into the corner keeper, no chance. And then the third one is back to what Leicester City are at the best, a really aggressive counter-attacking team. We get numbers straight up the pitch, KDH to Vardy. Vardy could have taken it himself.
Yep.
Didn't. Unselfishly squared it, and then he was at the back post to stab in his hat trick. I mean, absolutely, all three goals, great, two great team goals, one individual contribution. Yeah, I mean, man of the match performance.
That's captain shit right there from Vardy. That's what a captain does. You know what I mean? And how many times last year did we see James Maddison do the exact fucking opposite of that? That, if I'm being real, if we counted up those opportunities where he took some stupid fucking shot instead of laying it off to Harvey, we probably wouldn't even be down in this league. But I digress. I'll say this about Fatawu. The kid's energy, and, you know, we've said it multiple times on the pod this year, we call him the new Naki. It's just infectious. And that, the celebration on the first goal, do you guys have any idea how hard it is to do an inverse backflip, aka a gainer, is what we called him off the diving fucking board when I was a kid growing up, because you needed to jump off a diving board to flip your body inverse like he did. That is athleticism with no compare. Like, that was one of the most impressive celebrations I've ever seen. He could have done, you know, the round off backflip. Those are easy. But to stand there and flip back is just absolute madness. The kid's a freak.
Do you think Seagrave has a room with a phone box where everyone can practice these celebrations?
Honestly, he's been practicing that somewhere, because I would have broke my neck. Actually, I wouldn't have even been able to rotate. I just would have just looked like a fish and just flopped on my fucking back. I just, it's absolutely insane. And man, I love this guy. And I hope that we can find some way to hold on to him. Who knows?
Well, good news, Matt. We're contractually obliged to pay $17 million, aren't we, for it?
Yes, but I don't know. And I guess this is going to have to be another show in itself, dude. But the embargoes and whatever the fuck is going to come down. And I just, it's who knows who we're going to be able to sign or not sign.
So. Yeah, no, I thought, yeah, Matt, he was great. I kind of, one of the things I did enjoy as well for these past two games, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. We saw a little bit of what the beginning of the season Wilf, in the way that he got forward and was aggressive in getting into the box. I mean, you think of the West Brom goal, like obviously him and Vardy are up there. He takes advantage of the parry and sticks it in. And then his goal against Southampton, you've got a guy who's coming in late, that sort of stuff that we wanted him to see at the beginning of the year has come back. And I thought I thought the midfield was very good against Southampton. I thought we were the way that we set up put us in a position where we could kind of counter the way that they played. I thought Vestergaard looked pretty good against Southampton as well. Thought his passing was really good. I think the only dark kind of mark I'd say on the team over the past two games is, I think Faust, I can't see him anymore as a Leicester City defender. I mean, he was a guy that I thought had potential, but I think he's just too much of a crazy puppy, and he just runs, and he just doesn't. He's got like zero and one. Zero, he stands still and does nothing, like the Millwall game, like the Plymouth game, like the Hull game. And one, he just steams into the back of someone and puts us in trouble because there's now a ginormous hole behind him. Like, I think tactically, he's just so unaware of his situational presence. It's so frustrating to have. Like you said, we'll talk in the off season about the players that we're going to lose, but he's been one of the bigger disappointments and continues to be in the side. I mean, who else apart from Vardy stood out for you over these past two games?
One that I'm so glad you asked, because, and I've done this a lot this year, but I keep coming back to Mads Hermansen, man. We struck some Danish gold again with this boy, and the way that he sees the game, the way that he distributes the ball, now we are seeing he has that ability. Granted, he hasn't gotten to do it much this season, so a few of those passes weren't dead on, but I just think it's another element of this game that is now being allowed to be unlocked. And again, props to Enzo for being a system manager that's willing to, as we're seeing now, evolve a little bit and give Mads that ability to play. The amount of balls that we played long, even when we were winning against Southampton, was incredible. So Yeah, I shout out to Mads Hermansson. If it's not saves, like some of the fucking saves this kid has made this year, you guys, are season defining saves. So that would be the one that I wanted to shout out.
Sorry, carry on.
No, I was going to say, I also wanted to say your shout to Ndidi is great as well. I think that what we're seeing now from him is, and the reason we weren't seeing a little, I think he's healthy again. I really think that injury was more than what it was made out to be. And I think he's really starting to feel himself again. And he wasn't when, in my opinion, he was kind of rushed back to the side because of the
100%. Yeah, bang on. I think you bang on. I think we rushed him. We rushed Ricardo back. We've had to rush these players back because of the situation. 100% agree. Going back to Mads, I mean, what, the player of the season? I know the consensus probably is KDH, but I'm with y'all. I think Mads has had sneakily a great season. I think,
yeah,
considering the situation we've been in the past couple of years around the goalkeeper and losing Kasper and then having Danny Ward, who, I mean, and the kind of ups and downs of having Danny Ward behind the net and then having a kid relatively unknown, young, coming into the league and doing what he's done. I mean, he has everything. To your point, Matt, like his distribution is fantastic, but I think what's gone under the radar has been the key saves in those moments. Like the guy has pulled off, has won us countless games through his ability to make a save. And it's, yeah, I hope we can keep him for as long as we can because, I mean, he was rightly awarded goalkeeper of the year in the championship last week. And so, brilliant season from him. And I think I'm assuming KDH is probably going to win it, but I'm with you. I think my vote would go for Mads.
I think when you look at the, started game one, how many times have we referenced that Coventry match at this year? And when he had save after save after save that could have started this season off on a loss to a rival. I mean, who knows where we end up if our momentum starts off shittily like that. We already had enough struggles when it started out great this year. So if we lose, I just don't even want to think about it. But I got to say, he has been a revelation and has just been, I would say he's probably my player of the season, if I'm being quite honest. And I'm with you, there are going to be teams sniffing around him. The amount of players on this team that we are going to have to fight off people for, it's pretty stupid.
Yeah, it's kind of wild when you think back to the beginning of the year. If you told us that one position where we would have multiple players that could cover that, absent minus Danny Ward, would be goalkeeper.
God.
We would have been like, what are you talking about? But you've got now Mads and Stolacek, who has played a hell of a gig as well this year. And yeah, I think, yeah, you're right, mate. I think he's going to be wanted by a lot of clubs over the summer.
Let me ask you this, Chris. Yeah. Have you ever heard of Bobby Bonilla?
He is the Mets player that gets paid a gazillion dollars every year, doesn't he? Yeah, happy Bobby Bonilla Day. Yeah, yeah, I've heard of it.
So Bobby Bonilla is, for those of you who don't know, in the UK, he's a player that played for the Mets years ago, and he got signed to this big ass contract, but they deferred the money like 27 years or something stupid. So every year in July, you know, a day comes around and they got to pay this guy like $1 million+. And that's how I see Danny Ward now for us. Like, he's just this old ass man collecting a fucking paycheck.
He's on a Shohei Ohtani deal, basically.
Yeah, it's with a quarter of the talent fucking sitting there scratching his nuts, collecting a paycheck, you know, taking shots from the U21s. It's just unreal. There's got to be an MLS team we can shovel this guy off.
Matt, don't say that. He's coming to San Diego. Don't say that, buddy.
No, I heard Ochoa is
Wouldn't that be great if we spend the entire offseason saying, hey, you know what? Get him off to the MLS. Get him off to the MLS. And it turns out San Diego FC's first lineup is Danny Ward in goal, Vestergaard at center off with fouls.
Oh my Christ. I could deal with the rest of them, but if I might have to just meet him at the airport in San Diego if he got signed here and just send him home. That would just be unacceptable. But So yeah, guys, as we said, Preston on Monday. Also, how fucked up is it that the league just gave us this bullshit on a Monday night match? Like, they couldn't have made it a Saturday. I guess it's par for the course for how we've been treated by Sky all year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem we've got this year is that because like we talked about, four teams, 90 points, the whole narrative around it was anyone's league to get up. You're going to get the games moved around. And I think, to your point, the problem is you've got that balance with the championship where you've got to understand the Premier League has the best times. And then it's like, okay, how do we fit the key championship games around that? And you're right. It is a bit, I suppose the only thing I would say is that I think both ourselves and Leeds have had situations now where you've gone short week into a long week. I think Ipswich is the weird one, given Coventry getting to the FA Cup semi-finals and how they didn't even play on Saturday. And it feels, I can imagine if you're an Ipswich fan, it felt like you lost even though you didn't play because of just the fact that we got 6 points in that period and you got nothing. And so for the fans, I mean, Preston, yeah, it's still a long way to go. I mean, it ain't like a trip. It's just not like 20 minutes down the M1. It's what, two and a half hours to get to the north of England. I mean, fair play to all what was sold out that end. So there's going to be about 5,200 Leicester fans at the game as well. So it should be a great atmosphere. And I think ultimately they're a team that have probably got nothing to play for, which is, I don't know whether that's a blessing or a curse, but I think if we can't get 3 points on Monday get 3 points against Blackburn on Saturday, the following weekend, I mean, we don't deserve it. I mean,
mate, I'm telling you, mate, they're going to smash them.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me Monday night at Preston, potentially of kind of Bolton back in 2014 when we got promoted. The entire stand behind the goal was full of Leicester fans. Back then you had that crappy little flag that came out that said champions promotion. And all that. So, and then these crappy little bottles of LD sparkling wine that the players would just be flying around. So yeah. I'm hoping we'll get a repeat of that, mate. But you know what this club's like. Who knows?
Yeah, that was a great day, man. Nelly Dyer and throwing around Big Nige. I still got my promotion pin from that day. So that was a fucking incredible day. So let's have it again on Monday, guys. Let's get it done and just be happy.
To be honest, mate, I would prefer Leeds slipping up Friday tomorrow. If I'm totally honest.
I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah.
We're
recording this on Thursday night. So please fuck it up tomorrow, Leeds. That would be amazing.
And to your point, Matt, it would epitomize this championship season that we get promoted through another rival doing something, not winning a game. And kind of sum up the back end of this year.
Yeah, and I mean, especially QPR really doesn't have shit to play for. I think what Ipswich has, Hull, and Hull definitely have something to play for.
Yeah, Hull, what, a seventh looking to get that sixth spot again.
Right.
They beat Coventry midweek. So yeah, Hull are fighting for their lives to get that playoff spot.
For sure.
So yeah, I think there's multiple opportunities. I struggle to see a weekend where the top three go chalk. Like, I don't think we've seen that in a while, and I can't see that this weekend either.
For sure. For sure. Well, guys, before we go any further, we wanted to get our boy from Leicester, Mr. Ollie McLean, get his comments after last week's match and just his general ideas of where we are so far in the season. So let's send it over to our man at the match, Mr. Ollie McLean.
Hey, West Foxes, hope all is well. What a week we've had, pretty much guaranteeing our promotion back to the Premier League. After a 2-1 win against West Brom, and then a 5-0 thumping of Southampton, which was just, it was phenomenal. I'm not an optimistic fan usually. I never think we're going to smash teams. And when I do, when I am optimistic, we'll get beat 3-0. And to be perfectly honest, Tuesday I went into it thinking they're hunting. It's a big game for them because they're still in it, and they're going to come at us. And we just played them off the park. They did, not a single shot on target in 90 minutes of football, and you sat fourth in the league, and we made on pay, which is what we needed to do so much more this season. We've needed to just finish teams off and give them no way back, make them give up. Because after that third, that's what Southampton did. They just shut up, and just tried to get a goal, maybe get a consolation. But yeah, that was mint. It really was on Tuesday night. And yeah, which takes us to Preston, which gives us the automatics, which would be brilliant. 5,700 Leicester fans in Preston, hopefully celebrating a win, hopefully celebrating getting back up. If we're not up before that, obviously, because if Leeds don't get the result, we could be up then. But I'd much rather go up when we're playing. As much as I want to just get it over and done with and get up, so we know we're up, I want to do it in our own time when we're playing. But yeah, we were still on a high off Tuesday night. It was fantastic. So yeah, now we get to watch the whole set of games at the weekend, relax and enjoy Monday, because it's going to be a good one, and I can't wait for it. It's what a season it's been, man. It's full of ups and downs, but it's been a fantastic season. Yeah, business end now, and I can't wait to keep on going up the city.
What a lad. Thank you to Ollie, as always, for giving us his incredible perspective all season long. It has just been such a delight to have him and have his honesty. And this match day experience is just, it's been amazing.
I'll say shout out to Ollie to making me feel like I'm 18 again, because every time I wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, especially after that West Brom game, we got pictures of Jaeger bombs and pines. it felt like we were behind on the party, and it was like, God, it's at least 7 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, it's so true.
Top lad. So no, true, man. I'm so excited for people like Ollie who have followed this club through thick and thin this season, has spent a lot of money supporting this team, has gone down to Preston, to Plymouth, has been there at the darkest moments. And I do understand where he's coming from, in the sense that he would love to see it on our own terms. And so I really do hope that we pull a performance in Monday for people like Ollie and everybody else that has followed this fan base, followed this club through thick and thin this season, because it hasn't been easy, as we've said. And it's only through people like him do we have the ability to do this. And so, Ollie, I hope this club does you proud on Monday, mate, because we're all rooting for it.
Amen to that. And yeah, so as we said, guys, Preston on Monday, the David Nugent Derby, round two, get a good result. And let's just put it away and wipe our hands of this crazy fucking nerve-wracking season where we tried to fuck it up multiple times, but somehow ended up on the right side. So, yeah, let's just get it done and pack it away, man. On that note, I think that's a good spot. Anything else that you want to shout out or say before we head out, Chris?
No, I'll just say huge shout-out to the New York Foxes for their turnout as well on Tuesday down at the Football Factory. There was a hell of a lot of people there for that game as well. So kudos to the boys and everybody that turned up in New York for that game. That's absolutely awesome. It was, I did love the photo as well. Everyone giving it the five.
The five. Yeah. I always love it when I see their photos, because I wish Jason was here. We could talk about it, but it's always fun to me, because when I don't recognize people, I always know that those are, you know, people from Leicester visiting New York City. And I'm always like super jealous, because I think, you know, Chris, when we started this podcast, I think one of our stated goals was to make San Diego the tourism hotspot of Leicester, for all people from Leicester. And so we're slowly but surely making progress on that.
Well, I just love the idea as well that these people go to New York and they go back to the KP, and like the guy in front of them who are their friends with over the years turns around and goes, "Oh, how was New York?" And they were like, "Bloody brilliant. We watched a Leicester game at some pub with a load of great American lads." Like, nothing about the Statue of Liberty or the Empire State Building. It's Jason Jordan and the guys were so nice. Brilliant.
Those absolutely brilliant. Boxes. So, guys, if you are able to get off work on Monday, I know the San Diego Foxes will be having a little meetup at our Blue Foot Bar. Hopefully, we'll get four or five of you guys out there. New York Foxes will be getting together. I'm sure our friends up in Rochester will be getting together, and they'll be having a great meetup as well. So, wherever you are around there, just hit up somebody and see if you can watch the game with them, and let's see what happens and get promoted. And we will be back with another episode after Monday, probably looking to record next Tuesday or Wednesday before the final match on Saturday. So hopefully by then it's done, dusted, and we've got an easy, fun show where we're laughing with Jim and Jason about this season, and we can all have fun with it. But on that note, guys, we're going to send you off. Thank you for joining Chris and I this evening. Shout out to Jason and Jim. Our other co-hosts couldn't make it tonight. They are busy. It is late. We totally get it. But yeah, Chris, anything else to say to the fine folks before we go?
Keep the faith, guys. 3 more points.
Hell yeah. So from Blaby to Birmingham, guys, we'll see you next time on the U.S. Foxes podcast. Peace.